Today is July 20th, 1998. This is Kelly Elaine Navies. I'm in the home of Mr. Everett Earl Parrish. This is our first interview as a part of the Stevens Lee Project. Mr. Parrish, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Let's begin with a few questions. Where were you born?
In Asheville, North Carolina.
Were you born in this neighborhood?
Yes, the central part of Asheville. There was a hospital, a colored hospital, the Blue Ridge Hospital.
Oh, you lived near the Blue Ridge Hospital?
Not too far from where it was. It's long years been demolished.
What street was it on?
The corner of Patton Avenue and Clingman.
Okay. What year were you born in?
1929.
You were born the year of the stock market crash.
Yes, I sometimes think that brought it about.
Really? Okay. Well, what did your parents do?
My mother was a domestic worker, had attended college, was a music major. My father was a native, actually, of Cuban Islands, and his family lived in a place called Cedar Key Island off the coast of Florida in the Gulf.
Really? Okay, we need to take a short pause. Okay, we're returning now from a brief pause. You were telling me that your father was a Cuban native, and you were explaining that he did a lot of things. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, unfortunately, I knew very little about my father's life. My mother and he had separated just prior to my birth, some months prior to my birth. Mm-hmm. And she came here to Asheville. They had lived in Philadelphia and Washington, where my other siblings were born. Mm-hmm. And she returned here to give birth to me. And he continued on back to the old homestead in Cedar Key. So as a young boy, I knew very little about my father's life, only what my mother had told me. He had worked in several trades. He was a presser. He also was a waiter in hotels. Various odd job type.
Okay. So how many siblings did you have, or do you have?
I have, two sisters and two brothers.
And your mother raised you all?
Yes. I was raised here. By my mother, my grandmother, and my aunts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lived in a family home.
Okay, okay. So this was in the Depression, basically, when you were growing up.
Yes, yes.
Were you aware that you were growing up in the Depression at the time?
Yes, I guess you were aware of it. We grew up in a rather unusual type of family. Most of my family, fortunately, were educated people. I have three aunts that were teachers and even taught here in the public schools. Mm-hmm. And so, actually, we were taught primarily at home even before going to school. Mm-hmm. Most of us could read right before we went to school. Mm-hmm. Normally, as a child, you fit into the curriculum of the day. You aren't really aware of any of the politics or anything that's going around you. We knew there were people who lived a lot better and had a lot more. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of toys, a great deal of changeable clothes, that type of thing. So we knew we were on the lower end of the scale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. What elementary school did you go to?
I attended Livingston Street Elementary School.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was a segregated primary school.
And what grades did you go there?
From 1 to 6.
Oh, okay. You went there all the way to 6th grade. Hmm. What do you remember about Livingston, other than it was a segregated school?
Well, it was a fun place to go. Beside meeting most of the people I knew and my friends and playmates, we all walked to school.
Hmm.
It's kind of strange to see all the school buses transporting children when we had to walk 2-3 miles to school, thought nothing of it. Mm-hmm. We'd meet our playmates on the way and pick up 2 or 3, and when we got to school, might be 10 or 12 in the group. The teachers there was a very good staff, an excellent staff, and of course, all black. And there, I guess we got the very first education into black history, because they taught what was required by the state, but they also gave us a lot that wasn't required. And it was a school of culture. There was musical classes. We had plays, sports for the primary grades. It was excellent school.
Can you give me an example of something that you learned in black history from Livingston School?
Well,
it was a long time ago.
Yeah, we knew of some of the black musicians like Nathaniel Dett, of course Langston Hughes, some of the poets, various stories of renowned black people at that time.
You were telling me that you were very familiar with The Creation. Were you first introduced to that? I'm talking about James Weldon Johnson's The Creation.
That perhaps came about when I was in junior high school at Ashland Avenue. We used to have oratorical contests, and a lot of times it was done in churches. And of course, at that time, the Stevens Lee High School had the auditorium, and of course a lot of the primary grades in the junior high school put on productions or whatever at Stevens Lee. And yes, I learned that Creation. I used to recite it quite often.
So I was going to get to that next. You went to Ashland Avenue from middle
school? Ashland Avenue Junior High, yes.
So that would be for 7th and 8th grade?
7th and 8th grade, yes.
How was Ashland Avenue, where was it in relationship to where you lived and
It was within 2 blocks of my original home.
So that was a shorter walk.
Yes.
Okay. So did you enjoy going there as well?
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed school. I always did enjoy school. And there again, like I say, the staff, I know now they were excellent.
So you felt well prepared when you went on to high school?
Oh, no doubt, yeah. I just look forward to going to Stevens Lee as all the rest of the children did. I think just before, I went to Stevens Lee in 44, and I believe that was the year that the 12th grade was added. So I think we remained at Ashland for another year to the 9th grade, and then went to Stevens Lee the 10th, 11th, and 12th, as I recall.
So you were saying that all the kids looked forward to going to Stevens Lee?
Oh, yes. Oh, that was, yes. That was a major thought in our mind. When will we get to Stevens Lee?
What was it about Stevens Lee that you looked
forward
to?
Well, most of our older siblings had attended Stevens Lee. Mm-hmm. And as children in the primary and the junior high school, whenever we had a major production to be put on, because we rehearsed at the school, but we always went to Stevens Lee to present our programs on the stage there. And, of course, there with the larger children and a lot we knew, we wanted to grow up. We wanted to go to Stevens Lee. Yeah.
So you were familiar with the campus already?
Oh, yes, yes. It, yeah.
Before you went there?
It was even known then as the Castle on the Hill. I guess right after it was open, I guess somebody named it the Castle on the Hill.
So as long as you can remember, it's been known as the Castle on the Hill. So, do you remember before going to high school, were you like conscious of the fact that you were going to segregated schools? Was it something you thought about?
Well, yes. I used to run errands for the principal. And a lot of time I had to carry messages, papers over to David Miller High School, which was an all-white school. And I just can't remember where the superintendent's office was located, but a lot of time the principal would call upon me to personally carry messages or items back and forth. And I would get to the school and I would see it was all white. Fortunately, Stephen Lee was a new school, and it was a beautiful school. But when you go into some of the other schools in the primary grades, you could see the difference in the infrastructure and the furnishings. Mm-hmm. You know, even the playground equipment was different, you know. At that time, we received what known as hand-me-downs. Mm-hmm. We received the books from the white schools, and oftentimes in the late summer, we were called upon to do a lot of cleaning and erasures from the books to prepare for the school year. Mm-hmm. A lot of the lab equipment and stuff like that came from the other white schools. As they got newer material, we would receive the hand-me-downs. Mm-hmm. But we had a wonderful staff that could improvise, and we thought we were top notch.
Right. So, did you ever question this situation, segregation? Was it something that you asked adults about?
I grew up on Grove Street, South Grove, right at the intersection of what's now known as Hilliard Avenue. And immediately to the west of me was South French Broad. To the east of me was Ashland Avenue. And at that time, that was a predominantly white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. To the north of me was predominantly white and well-to-do white. There were mansions on that street. Mm-hmm. Going south, you got deeper into the black neighborhood. I knew a lot of white children, and I played with a lot of white children. My grandmother cared for some of the white children in the immediate surrounding areas. The difference was that I didn't see them at school. And oftentimes, as I grew older and would see them uptown, I could see the reluctance on their part to get close or let it be known that we were close. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, they had slept in my house and eaten the same food with me. And, mm-hmm. had been cared for by my grandmother.
Mm. Another pause. We return after a brief pause, and we were discussing your early perceptions of segregation.
On many occasions, when we were in the central part of the city where all the business was transacted, I would notice that there were the different water fountains, the colored white only. Restrooms weren't available to us. And sometimes we had to walk two or three blocks to use facilities, which there was a section called The Block in Asheville that was black business, and there we felt more comfortable. Oftentimes, when I would go to the movies, we always had to use the back entrance up the stairs to the balcony, and I used to question why we had to do that. It seemed that we were paying perhaps the same fee as the rest. There were some theaters that were off limits to us. And one of the most impressionable things about that was that during the Christmas season, they would bring such stories like Dickens' Christmas Carol, or stories relating that, and they would bring it to a theater called the Imperial Theater, which was in the central part of town. And they had no facilities for blacks to attend. And consequently, we always questioned. We knew the story, perhaps had even read it, but weren't allowed to go into places of that nature. The stores, being a tourist city, most of the stores were geared toward the tourist trade. Hmm. And it was very difficult for the family to provide proper clothing because of the prohibited cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were stores that opened up later years for the working man. I think of Belk's. Sears probably moved in. Mm-hmm. But we had very exclusive stores in Asheville, mm-hmm. and they were geared to the tourist trade. And, of course, clothing there was just prohibited.
Hmm. That's interesting. So tell me a little bit more about The Block. Where was that located?
The Block, Eagle Market Street area, it's only one half a block from the Peck Square, which is the center of the city. And it was on the block and all of that area that we had our black businesses. And there were many, many. I mean, everything from the professionals had their businesses, the doctors, the lawyers, the barber shops, the restaurants. I think two funeral homes were located there, a theater, a black theater. Just numerous businesses, dry cleaning.
When you say black theater, are you talking about a movie theater? Or?
Yeah, a movie house, yes.
Oh, so there was a black movie house.
I never knew who actually owned it, but it was for black, and it was manned and by blacks.
Did it show first-run films?
No. Well, that's where we saw some of the old early black movies. Lena Horne, Robinson. There was a couple of black cowboys. Of course, we got all the local chapter pictures, but most of them were geared toward the black community. Most of them were black stories.
And that was called the Eagle?
The Eagle Theater.
What do you mean by local chapter? I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that. Local chapter.
Oh, chapter pictures?
Yeah.
Oh, these were something you... like a serial, like a soap opera, but it's shown usually weekly. It changed. It was about a half-hour run, and you got engrossed in the chapter picture, whether it be Captain America or Superman or whatever, that nature. And, of course, it always ended on an upbeat, and you'd always want to go back the next week to see how the hero got out of the situation.
They
show those there, yeah.
How much did it cost to go to the movie theater?
Oh, gee. I can remember, not particularly about the Eagle Street, but I can remember when we would receive, say, 25 cents. Bus fare was 6 cents, so we never rode the bus. We walked everywhere. But we could take 25 cents and go to the Plaza or the Paramount Theater, which was segregated, the balcony. And we'd always have enough money to either buy... chip in and buy a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts. Maybe three or four of us would pool our money. And probably 15 cents a dozen. We always had enough money to see the movie and have some type of refreshments.
With a quarter.
With a quarter, yeah.
So Krispy Kreme's been around for a long time.
Yeah. And we used to like them hot out the oven, you know, right?
I didn't know that. Okay, so you said you never took the bus. Why not?
Well, to save the 6 cents.
Okay.
We walked everywhere else. I mean, walking was just a way of life with us.
Yeah.
It was nothing. That's why I say when I returned here to know that they were busing children. And, of course, school would close the first drop of snow. I remember walking in snow at least ankle deep.
To get to school.
They very seldom closed school.
Okay. So let's move back to education then. We left off at your junior high school years, and on your way to Stevens Lee. Tell me about how it felt to start Stevens Lee.
Wonderful, but one of the things I can remember most, I was very small in stature. Probably didn't grow until I was about 17, and I used to wear short pants and knickers, as they call them, with the high socks. And I was going to Stevens Lee for my freshman year there. And I just really couldn't come to grips with going to Stevens Lee in knickers in the winter and short pants. And, of course, I've always had some type of little job, even after school, whether it be in the neighborhood or somewhere. And I remember working and buying my first pair of long pants, and they were what we call blue jeans now. And I bought two pairs. I refused to wear short pants and knickers to high school.
So you remember those first blue jeans?
Oh, yes.
And how much did those cost?
Oh, gee, probably a couple of bucks, maybe at the most.
Mm-hmm. Were they Levi's?
I don't even know the brand. See, back then, 75 cents an hour was about tops for a job, for the blacks anyway. $25 a week. I held little odd jobs. Even at the age of 13 and 14, I went into the hotel and country club as a runner for the buffet table. I'd supply the table with replenishment of food. And I had a lot of friends who worked in the hotel trades. My uncle was one. And they got me in for a short period of time. I even had to have work papers at one time. So I always worked, and even when I was in high school, fortunately, I had come from a family that was educated and had taught us how to read and write, and perhaps I was just a little bit advanced over the other children and didn't require as much study. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I had permission from my principal to leave school whenever they called from the hotels needing extra waiters or help. I introduced a lot of my friends to that way of living.
Oh, so you did that during high school?
Oh, yeah, and oftentimes I made more money than my mother made on her job, and she worked 6-7 days a week.
Really?
And I would bring home more in a couple of days or three than she would all week.
So which hotels did you work at?
I worked at the Battery Park, the Langren, the George Vanderbilt, Asheville Country Club. I did a short stint at the Biltmore Forest Country Club. I worked in private homes as a butler, a houseboy.
So this is rich material for an entirely another interview with you. But I want to ask you, with the money that you earned from these jobs, was this your money, or did you share it with your family?
It was my money, but my grandmother, oh, just a remarkable woman. That's a story all by itself. I would often go home and offer her if she needed some of this for anything, and occasionally she'd take it. Then she would advise me to spend wisely. I spent most of my money on my clothes. And, of course, when I had a chance to be with my friends and have a little fun, go to the theater, I had my money there.
Hmm. Okay. So, Stevens Lee, you're at Stevens Lee now.
Yes.
Tell me about your first year at Stevens Lee, the classes that you took, for example.
I think when I went into Stevens Lee, they had started a new curriculum called CORE.
Hmm. Heard a little bit about
Yeah, and it was a little different structure than the schools had been. We were in a more relaxed atmosphere. Instead of sitting in straight rows, we sometimes sat at tables or we sat in circles. We may be introduced to a topic and we'd explore that topic in all veins. For instance, if we were studying I'll just say Russia. I don't know if we ever did or not, but if we were studying Russia, we would get our geography would be about Russia. Mm-hmm. We would learn about the Russian people and their way of life, and most of our English would be compositions written about what we've read about the Russian, or whatever subject was the topic at that time. Mm-hmm. Of course, we picked up our math, which is an exact science. There were those who took chemistry, biology. But most of the other was a general college preparatory course. Mm-hmm. There were trades in metalworking, woodworking, home economics. A lot of our girls learned quite a bit from the home economics. They were able to go into various hotels and private homes, too, and work, knowing how to set tables, prepare foods, that mm-hmm. type of thing.
So were there different tracks? Did you choose to do a general college prep or a trade?
Yes. Our counselors were good. And I think they, more or less, those that they thought were able to comprehend a college course, a college education, were geared to go into that direction. Mm-hmm. Those that may have been a little slower learning or something, then they were geared into the direction of working with their hands and a trade of that nature, mm-hmm. which proved to be very good. It was sort of the Booker T. Washington type thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hands-on.
So you can't, you had...
But I didn't, I didn't. I went into the college preparatory.
You went into college preparatory. So, in a sense, you had both Booker T. and W.B. Du Bois thing going on at the same time at the school.
Right. And because I leaned toward the arts in my extracurricular activity.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. I was going to ask you about that next, your extracurricular activity.
Well, I tried sports, but as I said, I was too small, and I just got crushed every time I got out on the field, so... I knew that wasn't for me. I could never sing. I love music. I wished I could do something with music, but I just didn't have the talent for music. But I liked acting, drama. I liked the stories. Whether it be Shakespeare, whether it be some contemporary, I liked all the stories. I had a very vivid imagination. I could, oh, wow, yes. I used to read all the mythologies and all the fairy tales, and I'd be right there in it. So it was a natural calling for me. So drama was my favorite, one of my favorite extracurricular subjects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you were telling me before a little bit about the drama club and the type of things that you did with the dramatic club.
Oh, yes. We had a wonderful teacher to come there, Mrs. Ann Peace Tolliver, who was the wife of the principal when I was there. And she had received her master's degree from, I think she taught from a professor from Yale at one time.
Hmm.
She used to talk about him in drama courses. At least she had taken courses there, but she had a master's in English and drama. And superb. She was superb and everything. So we formed a couple of dramatics group. We had a senior group, and then we had a entering group. And we became very well known throughout Western North Carolina. We even traveled to South Carolina with plays. We normally gave our plays at Stevens Lee. We had a festival.
Mm-hmm.
We would invite other black schools to come up and join our festival. Sometimes there would be seven or eight different schools, and this might go on for a couple of days, each school presenting their plays. Stevens Lee may even present four one-act plays in this festival. Then we always had a major production, which might be two or more acts, usually three. And we had the honor of being invited to the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill as guest performers with the Carolina Playmakers. And, of course, that was a highlight for us.
When was that?
Oh, to be exact, probably in 47. I graduated in 48. Has to be in the later years, 47 or 48.
Which play did you present there?
Coffins and Chariots.
Hmm. Tell me a little bit about that. What was that about?
Well, as I can recall, it was a story of, gee whiz. The opening scene was at a funeral. And, of course, the main character was deceased. That was me. So I had to...
You were the main character?
I had to perform my opening scene in a casket.
Really?
Yeah. And then it goes on with the lover or the wife of the deceased and little interactions between people, and he appears to her as a ghost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I can't just get the gist of it now, but I do remember the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about going to Chapel Hill. You said it was the highlight for
you.
What was that trip like for you?
Oh, wonderful, of course. I think we traveled in private cars.
Mm-hmm.
There were probably 12 of us, I guess, in the production, somewhere along there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had heard about this great school in North Carolina. You know. I think it was Foster Fitzsimmons was the director, and It was a school that Charlton Heston had attended. He was one of the playmakers. And so we were going to this big university. And it was huge. The campus was beautiful. I remember people used to ride bicycles there. I thought that was just beautiful. Everybody had bicycles. And of course, I think there's a, is it a wishing well or a gazebo on the campus?
Yeah, it's the old well.
That was a gathering place.
Yeah, it used to be the only water source on the campus.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, we were there, and then, of course, at the Playmakers Theater there. But it was, and to meet and interface with all these different people, and a lot of them were well, at college level, and I guess the graduate students, and to see them perform, you know, it was an inspiration to us.
So you were treated well there?
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, we were guests, you know. I don't think there were any other blackout schools there at the time. We were, because of what we had done up here in the mountains and word had spread, we were known throughout the eastern part of the state, around here in western North Carolina, Tennessee, Johnson City. I guess word got to someone that they knew of this group, and they invited us to be a guest performer.
Were you guys nervous?
Well, not really. At least I wasn't, you know. Mm, I mean.
Okay. So, were all the teachers at Stevens Lee black?
Yes.
All of them were. Okay. Let me ask you, how did you get to school when you got to Stevens Lee?
You walked.
You walked?
Yes.
So it was pretty much the same experience?
Yes.
As before. How far was the walk from where you were living then?
Within 2 miles, I'd say, 2 to 3 miles from where I lived.
Okay. So it was similar to when you had to walk to Livingston?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, just about as far one as the other.
Okay.
And, of course, if you had a girlfriend that lived in another part of town and you walked her home from school, you had a pretty good walk. If she lived down here on the south side of town from the east to the south and you had to go back north.
So did you have a girlfriend in high school?
Yeah, right.
What was her name?
Well, I married her.
Okay. Oh, that was Gloria.
Yeah, that was my favorite, and I married her.
Mm-hmm.
I knew a lot of people, but I didn't date that much because I worked.
Right.
A lot of my classmates that I attended classes with, I never saw them only at school. They may live in the east end or the north end or west Asheville or even in the county.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I didn't have that interaction with them daily. It was the children that lived on the south side of town. I lived centrally, but going south was all black.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally I spent most of my time in that area, so I knew most of the children there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So consequently they're classmates that I probably wouldn't even recognize.
Hmm. Well, tell me, what was your main social group? Who were your closest friends when you were at Stevens Lee? A few names that you recall.
Oh, well, my good friend Charles Goodman. Story about Charles, he was always known as Pete. His name was Charles Richard Goodman. Beautiful name. And, of course, he had brothers and sisters, and they had nicknames. But when graduation came, 12th grade, and they set you according to your last initial, it came to the G's and they called for Charles Richard Goodman. And of course, everybody turned. And up stands Pete. We always thought his name was Pete.
That's funny.
All those years, and I knew him well. He was my ace, you know.
And you didn't know his name was Charles.
We did everything together, yeah.
Okay.
I grew up with Lewis Rice, who still is a dear friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Roy McCullough, deceased, was a great, great friend. Roy went on. Roy and I left Asheville together in the early 50s. After he had served his stint in the service, I was married, and we left Asheville and went to Akron, Ohio, where we got our first big jobs. when I say big jobs, I was making 75 cents an hour here, and I was making $1.40 in Akron.
Mm-hmm. So, right after high school?
2 years after that. Roy had done a stint in the service. Oh, and he okay. came out of the service, and we left and went to Akron. Hmm. And I never came back. I stayed. Hmm. And I brought my family and son there to live with me.
Hmm. Oh, listen.
Then my second daughter was born in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Right during the time of the Great Shepherd murder case.
Oh, the one, the fugitive?
Dr. Shepherd, yeah.
Oh, wow.
In Cuyahoga Falls, yeah.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah. She was born in a Catholic hospital there. Hmm. And I stayed there in Akron. That's where I went to work for Babcock and Wilcox in Barberton, which was 9 miles. Mm-hmm. But Roy and I were inseparable. And, of course, Roy, being a GI, he had the GI Bill, was able to return to North Carolina. He attended A&T and graduated and went on and got his master's in music. He taught at Benedict College for years. Oh. He just retired from there prior to his death.
Mm. Okay. Mm. So those were your running buddies?
These were my two main. I had others, another Bobby McCullough, no relations to Roy, who's now a minister. But these were the guys you could count on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To hold you back, as you say, yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, I have friends here like... Otis Michael, who's a prominent doctor here now, mm-hmm. a little younger than I am, but we grew up together.
Mm-hmm. So, you were saying that you worked a lot, and so you didn't really socialize that much during the week.
No, very seldom during the week, and on weekends I worked. It was just that naturally, you know, you date a girl, you didn't see her that much. You'd see at school. And because you didn't do too much dating during school day, so usually you try to make it so that Friday evening you could go to the movie, mm-hmm. or Saturday after your chores were done.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So that's what you did for fun. You'd take your girlfriend.
Yeah, we did a lot of picnicking. Mm-hmm. We'd take hikes. Mm-hmm. We'd go up in the mountains and take victuals along with us. Always a group. We dated in groups.
Oh, you always dated in groups?
Mostly, until you got older. I guess our senior years and all, we started going our separate ways. But usually, my sister and I, we were running pals, and Pete's sister. And we just, village children, and we just all did things together.
Hmm. What year did your sister graduate?
In 47.
So she's just 1 year ahead of you?
Yes.
So you were always attending school with her, pretty much?
Just about, yes.
Oh, that must have been nice. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your sister.
But now, with my sister, I have a cousin, a first cousin, that we think of as a sister here, too.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister, oftentimes, my cousin was an only child. And so my sisters, Yvonne and Nadine, Yvonne was the oldest, when they were here, they oftentimes would stay with Louise, would live with Louise.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Louise was, she was a daughter of a doctor and a school teacher. And so they were more affluent. And usually Louise's mother always took the girls under her wings and would provide for them because they were able to.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep Louise company, one of the girls always stayed with Louise, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister Nadine oftentimes was living with Louise, but we'd meet up at school, and of course we were family. And
yeah,
I've stayed over there, too. I lived in with Louise, too.
Oh, that sounds nice. Yeah. Well, I know your sister was also very instrumental in the Alumni Association. Tell me a little bit about your sister.
Just marvelous. Just a wonderful, woman. Just dear to me. We always did things together. She was only about 2 years older than I was, but she's very protective of me. And she was sort of a tomboy. She liked to shoot marbles and roller skates, do things of that nature. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
we were playmates and all
this. This is Nadine.
Yeah, Nadine. Very smart, very smart. Nadine perhaps was smarter than, when I say smarter than any of us, she, of anyone that should have gone to college. So Nadine, she really had it.
Mm-hmm. Did she go on to college?
No, she took a couple of courses here in these business schools. Mm-hmm. But she was able to make it. She, in later years, she married young, mm-hmm. started having a family, but she was a manager for the one of these housing complex for mm-hmm. a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm reading some of the things she said about Stephen Slee.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very eloquent. So tell me, I'm curious, you were in high school in the 1940s. What was the political climate like on campus? Did you talk at all about the war or about race relations or that type of thing?
Well, we were war children, you know. Mm-hmm. The Second World War had ended in 1945. Mm-hmm. My older brother had served in the Army. Of course, there was rationing. Shoes were at a premium. Of course, you had to have stamps to buy anything, shoes, leather. Because sugar, all groceries was rationed. Everything was either with stamps. So there was a lot of trading going on in the city. Maybe a family that had 5-6 children would have an abundance of sugar stamps, you know, where a family of one or two needed shoes, mm-hmm. you know, they could trade off, yeah, and that, a lot of that was done, too, yeah, in order to provide.
Did you talk about politics on campus at all?
Not too much. I can remember my early years, I guess, Roosevelt. I saw him in person. He came here. No, politics. I don't think we were into politics too much. We were, well, I guess it was wartime. Right after the Second World War came the Korean conflict and the Vietnam, you know, just one thing. There was always a turmoil. We always said we were war children, you know. Mm-hmm. People speak of hard and difficult times. For our parents, I guess those were hard and difficult times. Right. And for the older kids, too, yeah, we felt it. Because mm-hmm. there's so many things you couldn't do and couldn't get a hold of. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them went into the service. And I guess that's when the migration started north, too, mm-hmm. going to the factories.
Mm-hmm. I think World War II, I know blacks fought in every war, but World War II especially, more blacks started to fight in the war. Was that something that was on your mind at the time?
We were conscious of our older brothers and fathers going off to war, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were they proud to go?
It was just duty mm-hmm. and no choice. The war itself, we never felt that, you know, other than just being loyal to your country, it really didn't affect us economically or politically either. Mm. We were just pawns. We were just frontline soldiers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody had to be up there to catch the bullets, and I guess they put most of us up there. But really, as far as the war, no, we had no feelings against the Germans, the Japanese. We got the propaganda and all that, you know, mm-hmm. in the movies and everything, but we had our own problems.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, did you think at the time, did you ever think segregation would end?
Well, really, I always thought there was going to be a big revolution.
You did, even back then?
After the soldiers started returning, yeah. And I was in class with a lot of them in my last year of high school. They had either dropped out at an earlier age and didn't finish and had gone on and was coming back under the GI Bill. And when I was in my first 2 years of college, I stayed with a lot of returning veterans. In fact, I shouldn't have been in the environment I was in. Having registered so late at school, I didn't have a dormitory room. Mm-hmm. But they had put up four barracks, A, B, and C, A, B, C, and D barracks, for returning soldiers. And rather than send me back from West Virginia, They gave me quarters in D Barracks, which was the last barracks, was actually off campus. Hmm. And I was thrown in an environment of grown men. Some were married, attending school. And I could see the anger and the hurt that was there. And they had come from all parts of the United States. And those that were from the southern states were just declaring they weren't going to take what they had taken anymore and haven't been overseas and served to, you know. So I used to get the idea that if this thing didn't come about some way, it was going to be a clash, you know, because I could tell these men were really keyed up over it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I guess it affected my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
Well, I was angry, too. Yeah. I hadn't had the experiences they'd had. But, it angered me.
Mm-hmm. So you were angry about race relations?
The situation. Not being able to do what others could do. The segregation type of thing, you know, the back of the bus, if you go to a restaurant, it's around the back, and oftentimes I didn't even patronize places like that.
So did you want, obviously you wanted those things to end.
Yes.
Did you want schools to be integrated at that time?
I can't say that I did. I don't think I gave it thoughts. Mm-hmm. It was never the question of me wanting to be with them. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to do what they could do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I had worked in hotels, some of the finest hotels here in Asheville all my life, but I couldn't sit down in the dining room. And as far as decorum and table